Hey, where's Micah? I didn't hear you scatter Wally in that whole episode. Where were you?
No, well, I didn't know this was a Seinfeld podcast. All of a sudden, we're changing our allegiances. Is there
Seinfeld podcasts now?
I will tell you this. Edition got a review once from a kind listener who said, "This is the Seinfeld of podcasts."
Well, that's awesome.
We're going to open Game of Owns with Seinfeld. I think
that is high praise.
Is it? When we're done with the show, we'll play out with Good Riddance by Green Day, circa 1997.
Wow. That's taking me back.
But we would have to end the show all in jail, right? That's the way it would have to work. We'd all find different ways to get arrested, and then we'd podcast from prison.
Micah, somehow I don't think that this group, and of course Selena's not here, so I can say that, you know, this group wouldn't have any trouble finding out ways to get arrested.
The natural progression of Game of Owns will inevitably, irrevocably lead us into imprisonment. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I feel like that's going to be the end of the show anyway.
I only hope it's not in Heron Hall.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
given those imprisonment conditions as seen in season two of Game of Thrones.
Well, hello everyone. We're making a podcast today. This is Game of Owns.
We promised there was a reason for us opening the show that way, right?
Do we?
Yeah. Unless you guys just wanted to hum the tune to Seinfeld to start off the show.
You said scatting, right? Scatterwally?
Scatterwallian. Triple chef.
I don't know what that means. Do you want to reveal what that might be, Micah or Zach?
Micah, you just posted it to your Facebook page.
I did. I was amused by this video that was created.
You're sitting in your house and you just gave it a soft chuckle, like, that's amusing. I'm going to share this with my Facebook friends.
Now, this was created by Matt and Comedy, and apparently they did multiple episodes. This is just the first one that I posted to my Facebook page, as Zach mentioned. But I happened to find it on this great website called GameOfOwns.com, if you've ever heard of it. But basically, it's Game of Thrones to the theme music of Seinfeld, as well as the audience of Seinfeld. So the people that put this together very cleverly composed this video with some really good music and audience additions, right?
Yeah.
And it's great. I mean, I think it's really funny. I'm surprised. Has anybody done this before with other shows? I'm guessing that's probably the case. I'm just out of touch with.
I think it's a thing, yeah.
What's going on in the real world.
But there's the thing that's so great about this is that it's one of those things I never really thought about, putting it to the pacing of like a regular sitcom. All you have to do is throw in laugh tracks, and it's just like the scenes where Joffrey, for example, is getting slapped by Tyrion. Brilliant shit. It looks like a comedy.
It's so dramatic too, though. Like the actors, you can still feel the tension, but it just gets taken away when you hear the laughs, and you're like, oh my
right.
God.
Oh, and Tyrion's walking away after the slaps, and he's basically
awesome.
Like, someone get me wine.
Dinner time.
Yeah. Well, I like when Ned took Baelish and shoved him up against the wall, and then all of a sudden Catelyn peers her head over the balcony. That was awesome.
Hello, Ned.
Oh, God, that's perfect.
So this episode is kind of an Owns catch-up episode. We haven't had one of these in maybe 2-3 weeks, right, Zach?
I don't know. Something like that. Yeah.
Just where we catch up on sort of the latest Owns that have come across our discuses,
podiums,
inboxes, outboxes, all
mailboxes, mailboxes.
Yes.
Please, guys, stop printing out your Owns and mailing them to our physical address. Please stop.
Are you saying we don't use that address? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that you use that address. Micah gets regular orders of Heron Hall scented candles sent to his sent to his homestead, and he lights one every breakfast and every luncheon. The ravens are getting tired, so there you are.
You know, it's not always easy to clean up after them either.
Well, right. They ask for so much.
They do. Corn.
Who's got that?
Who's got the corn?
There's one thing about this video, though, that I don't agree with at all.
What?
The description says Game of Thrones is a show about nothing.
Well, no. That was what they used to say about Seinfeld.
Right.
Seinfeld, Seinfeld was the show about nothing.
Got it.
So that's what it is. But yeah, no, Game of Thrones is definitely a show about something, whatever that might be.
Well, GQ certainly thinks that Game of Thrones is a show about something because this year, in their thing that they probably do every year. They might have just started this year. They handed over directly to the people behind Game of Thrones a victorious position of Blackwater being the greatest television episode of 2012, the last year on Earth. So it's even more important.
Yeah. And this is GQ's, Gentleman's Quarterly?
It is.
Yeah. So it's a yearly award from a quarterly magazine.
It's actually monthly. I think I've subscribed to GQ since I was 11, and it's called Gentleman's Quarterly because I believe that's the way it was classically, but it's more Gentleman 12erly. So yeah, dozenly.
Is the Dos Equis guy always on the cover?
He's always around the third of the way through it, just after the Dolce & Gabbana ad and the cool water. Aftershave.
Do you get like aftershave samples with your GQ?
David off cool water? Yeah, you do. Except I've been getting it on the iPad. I just downloaded it on the iPad and it doesn't, you can't really smell it. It just smells like glass.
Wow.
So yeah.
I think Tyrion would be deserving to be on the cover of GQ, don't you?
I believe he was, yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
he
that's
absolutely
of course
was.
Why I just said that.
Yes.
Yes, of course.
He was just making a callback, a connection. Yeah.
No, it's a good callback. And they do talk about Tyrion actually. In this interview that has taken place in this latest, is it the latest GQ?
Yes, I believe so.
So they interviewed, obviously Benioff and Weiss, George R.R. Martin, and in fact, the director, Neil Marshall, who directed the Blackwater episode. And it's this really cool interview kind of about how that came to be. To be honest, guys, like I expect to see a lot of the same information or similar information in the deleted scenes or not deleted scenes, the behind the scenes stuff on the season 2 DVD, because we all knew even going into it that Blackwater was this, you know, the whole season really led up to it, and they had to get like special permission, special budgets and everything to really make it work.
We talked a lot about limitations as far as the Blackwater episode is concerned regarding things like horses and creating the scale of the battle. This interview does a really good job of going in depth into that, even more than sort of our what was said over tweets or what was lightly grazed over in articles that were paraphrased. These are actual direct quotes from the showrunners and the creators, and they're basically saying Thrones has a budget of somewhere between, what is it, 60 and 70 million per season. Right.
Yeah.
And so coming at them and saying, we need some more money is kind of a big deal. And so the people at HBO were like, well, what do you need? An extra 500,000? They're like, well, actually, it's more like 2 point whatever million. And they gave it to them, you know, they gave them the money.
Yeah. And that definitely comes almost with, you know, with the expectation that the show would continue to win at the awards, I think, which is interesting because that, you know, it won the Emmy in its first season. But in the second season, it kind of didn't, even though it was, you know, I just wonder if they're going to be as easy to give the money in the next season. Although, as is stated in the article, they'll kind of have a season off almost, that the big battle they're really looking forward to next is apparently at the end of season 4, which I assume to mean the third book.
Micah, don't spoil it.
No, yeah. I'm not going to spoil it. I mean, I was just going to ask, you know, and George R. R. Martin talks a little bit about it in the interview, you know, how frustrating is it as an author to want to pour so much into this episode because he wrote it and not have the financial resources available. I mean, we joke around about, oh, he doesn't have enough horses, you know, he didn't get all the horses into the episode that he wanted. You know, they talk about, you know, Tyrion setting these ships up in a row, and they weren't able to do that because of budget. And, you know, it plays out really well in the book because he's such a great writer, and he goes into so much detail, and it really shows, you got a sense of how tactical Tyrion was with this entire plan in the show. But imagine reading it for several hundred pages, the whole setup and then the actual action of his plan taking place. I mean, it has to be a little bit frustrating on George R. R. Martin's end, right?
I think Martin says in this interview, and I love the quote, it's something along the lines of, you know, if I hadn't done some TV work before, I would have been more surprised. Mm-hmm. You know, where he said, you know, my previous experiences with TV helped to sort of soften the blow.
Right.
For some of the cuts they had to make, and you know, but you know, conversely, he said on the, you know, on the other side of things, as a screenwriter, I have to write it in because if you don't write it in, it'll never be in the show. Whereas if you write it and it gets cut later, that's better. You know, if it gets, you know, even if it gets cut for budget purposes.
We haven't reached this part in the series as far as our chapter by chapter stuff is concerned, but just watching the episode and drawing from that, I believe that what they have done with their restrictions, how they have worked around it. Basically, what I'm saying is they did a good job making it epic still with leaving a lot of those things out. And even at the scale that they shot it at, which a lot of people consider huge, I mean, massively huge, they asked for an extra $2.5 million, which is a big deal in TV. It was still trouble for them to shoot. There's a bit in here where they're talking about Peter Dinklage being an absolute badass and how he completely nailed the entire line where he's like, blah, 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 let's go kill them.
The brave men at the door.
Right. And they said that it was like super, super hard to shoot that scene. And he had literally three takes.
Yeah.
In the world of takes and numbers, that's a terribly low number of a terribly, terribly talented person doing the take. So very impressed by that. That's awesome.
Yeah, as were they. That was really, really cool. They also said, interestingly, about Peter Dinklage, they also said that when they were sort of courting him for the role of Tyrion back in season one, they told him that he would win an Emmy with his role. Like, that was sort of their invitation words, was you will win an Emmy. And of course he did in season one.
Right.
So that, I thought that was interesting. And I hadn't heard that before, that they kind of said that to him when they were offering him the role.
Did you guys see the bit where they were talking, or Neil Marshall was saying that he was basically just having a sleep and they called him and like, hey, do you want to do an episode of TV? And he was like, yeah, sure. That sounds fun. I'm a director. Let's do it.
When is it, next month?
Yeah. Benioff has a quote. He said, all right, afterward, he said, most directors looking at what Neil had to look at would have absolutely shat their pants.
Yeah, but it wasn't a month away. It was Monday.
Right.
He said, how weird is that though, that the director of the episode, you know, and it's interesting. He said before he got on the plane to go wherever it was they were shooting, if it's Croatia or Ireland or whatever, he watched season one like back to back, like we do, like as fans sometimes do, you know, just watch all the episodes you can. But by the time he got to actually be on the set, you know, you're still not sure about the characters' names, and he's supposed to direct this episode, but you know, he's so new to sort of everything. It's just really kind of a fascinating insight.
Right. And they also mentioned how they filmed at night because they're able to hide more. I don't know exactly what that means.
My guess, and Zach, correct me, you know, if you have any other insight too, like, but when you're dealing with digital effects as opposed to practical effects, you know, if it's a landscape, if it's blood, whatever you're doing, you can, it's easier to brush into gradient into black, because blackness is just shadow. It could be anything, and the eye doesn't normally catch, like, oh, that shadow doesn't belong there. So when you're dealing with something that doesn't exist, if you just give it black or dark edges and fade it out, it's a lot easier than if something's in broad daylight. You can tell if it doesn't fit in a lot easier if you can see everything.
It has some to do with that. There is a big limitation with shooting in darkness with effects, because a lot of the times you're using like a green or blue composite screen, and there's difficulty lighting that evenly versus things like fire and stuff like that, because you're dealing with reflections and a lot of other things like that. But you're talking about a production that's being done for the biggest episode in television of the year. So chances are they have a pretty badass setup of very expensive lights and a very well trained crew. So yes, on the other side of the coin, we have the fact that it's dark, that a lot of that black space can be just, oh, that's the other side of where he's running. Like, he's running on a pathway, and that's literally a third of the screen. The other third surrounding his body are just sort of dark corridors. You know what I mean? Or like, we have one big light on the ship. Well, there's a lot of darkness around that ship. So, or it's kind of a vague and broad point that he's making, but for example, when I'm filming stuff, it is always better when it's dark and when the lighting is controlled, because battling with the sun is impossible, basically. Like, the sun is very, very bright. It's going to take very, very, very difficult measures of equipment to battle with the sun's light. So it being at night makes that a much, much smaller limitation.
This reminds me of a commentary for the movie The Mummy, the remake, of course, in 2000, when Stephen Sommers, the director of the film, was talking about how they actually shot a lot of night scenes during the day and darkened them to make them look like night. Why would they do that, do you think? Like, that's not what Game of Thrones did, obviously, but, you know, he said that some of those scenes that were, you know, they appear to be night.
What you're talking about.
Of the desert were in fact shot during the day, and then they darkened them. It was really interesting.
Well, in that case, in order to make a wide vista-like shot, they're going to need all of that space lit. And that's a perfect example of needing the sun's light versus having 10,000 lamps, you know, pointing just out of frame
Right.
Where you can't capture that wide shot with your camera, because that was pretty well back in the day before large sort of CGI shots like we see on Game of Thrones, like we see on The Hobbit, like we see on Lord of the Rings were done.
Yeah.
And that's a really prevalent thing in Game of Thrones. You'll see, we posted a video of it before, but you'll see a half-built set with one small, in consideration of the entire shot, one small green screen, and that one composite that they have, that one key, allows them to basically build King's Landing behind these horse people riding into a very sparsely built set, you know, with like plaster, stones, and paint. It's actually really cool.
Yeah. I'm learning a lot here, actually. It's like going to film class. I'm serious.
Yeah.
It's like insight that you normally would never get just, you know, watching it on TV or even reading one of these interviews. So, but the interview itself kind of rounds out with them talking about all the gore. And
right.
Yeah.
I was surprised, actually, and I think it's kind of cool that they employ amputees to do a lot of the scenes. So when a guy who has his leg chopped off or an arm chopped off in the show, it's actually a person who is missing an arm or a leg in real life.
And Eric, you were talking about practical effects versus digital effects. This is the perfect example of, well, we can still pull off that crisp filmic look and we don't have to hand this off to a motion designer.
Right.
Like, we can literally use someone who is an amputee and just slice a leg off and sort of just knock it off as clothes.
And what's interesting is that they work on different schedules too. Like, if it's a practical effect, they have to work it into filming, whereas digital, I guess, gets handled in post or something, you know, or along a different schedule.
Working with digital artists in post-production, it just, if you watch some of the, to everyone that's listening, if you watch some of the Hobbit production videos, passively, you'll see a lot of composite work where they've got little trackers, little markers, like orange little X's on points of the green screen, or maybe on points of the actors, really. And those are sort of served as pieces that later on in post-production that these artists can anchor their effects onto. So it's kind of hard for them. It's much easier to make a practical effect versus doing a digital effect. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. God, I got reminded, right, as you were talking about The Hobbit, of the fact that it's 48 frames per second.
Which is magical.
That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, no, it's exciting.
But yeah, the interview, again, just kind of concluding here, you know, talking about the gore and the amputees, like, I thought that was just really interesting how they say, you know, we never really know how it's going to really turn out. And, you know, if we could do it again, they said even there were some scenes that were too gory, that they felt lingered.
Well, what I like, though, here at the very end, Martin says there's still two gigantic books to go. Five have been released, and he's halfway through the sixth of seven, which is a little bit of an update on where he is with The Winds of Winter. And there are many things David and Dan don't know about the eventual fates of some of these characters. I have the main beats of the books in my mind, but there's a lot that I discover in the process of writing. The devil is in the details, as they say, and there are a lot of devils in these books.
Well, whose fault is that, really?
Well, it's his, of course, but yeah. I just love how so integrated he is into this process, especially when he writes for, you know, the show itself. I mean, I'm drawing a blank on what he wrote for season one. I think he wrote Baylor, didn't he? Or he was involved in more than just one episode, I think. But obviously he wrote Blackwater, and it seems like he's writing one episode for season three, which is a huge event in the course of the series. So they're definitely utilizing him, and they're taking advantage of the fact that he's there and that they can use him. And I like that a lot.
Yeah. And apparently, you know, there is a little discourse here too about the scenes that are added that aren't in the book, like Circe poisoning her kids. I didn't know that wasn't in the book because obviously we haven't reached that book yet, but you know, just the scene where Circe is considering poisoning her children when she fears she's going to be, you know, caught and killed, I guess, by Stannis. That was actually more of a historical reference to World War II, and I didn't know that. But George R. R. Martin says, you know, the scenes that David and Dan add are generally great. They're almost scenes that are implied in the book. So I think that Martin has a really not loose writing style, because I'm sure a lot of it's tight, but he likes seeing what these two men interpret. And a lot of the things they do for characters and the characters he finds interesting and not necessarily like wrong or, you know, illogical.
It's really lucky for us as viewers and really just for the show as a whole, not only in the award season, but just the general talk about town, that the creator and writer of this actual series happened to have, previous to even writing this book series, writing for television as a screenwriter experience. Not on a small scale either, but actually professionally. And so going into it with HBO and actually creating a show, he is able to hop into the driver's seat on episodes like Blackwater and literally write the screenplay word for word, shot for shot, and not have to paraphrase through someone else, which is really powerful, obviously, because, you know, we see these sort of awards fly out and things like that. But honestly, mm-hmm. like on a much larger scale, I feel like, and this is probably me just guessing and projecting a little too much, but I think that he almost would have no other choice in the matter mentally than when he's writing these new books and like the piece he's writing now after the show has had critical success and it's such a fandom success and there's a fervor about it. I feel like he probably can't get away with, when he's writing, thinking of the show in his head when he's writing. And maybe some of the things he's writing are a little bit more fit for TV. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. I question that about J.K. Rowling, to be honest, you know, which is not really exactly meant to be a transition into our next topic. But, you know, when J.K. Rowling's writing,
I couldn't
help but think, well, what about, you know, what is the success of Potter doing to change the story? You know, and I guess, you know, all the major points didn't change. They were the same. But the fact that so many people all of a sudden are caring about, you know, these other characters and the different theories that she would get bombarded with at book signings and stuff when she was writing like book 4 and 5,
right.
You know, you just can't help but wonder how they influenced 6 and 7. And, you know, George R. R. Martin might be in the same, you know, boat here, where he's writing, you know, 6 or 7 books and, you know, there's this show. And these other, you know, cooks are in the kitchen now writing their own, you know, the actors have been cast. He's getting kind of a different view of the characters that have been inside his head the whole time. I mean, that said, he has been writing this series for more than one decade. And, you know, a lot of those scenes, like the payoff of Jon Snow's heritage, you know, he's been letting it slow burn for so very long that
right.
part of me thinks slowly he's pretty impenetrable. Burn. He's pretty impenetrable to any outside influence, because he has had such mastery over when to not reveal this crap that he doesn't want to reveal until a certain date and time. You know, he's held off so long that I might just think, well, it wouldn't affect him at all, you know, because he's that controlled with what he does.
And I know I'll let you do your segue here in a second, since you brought up J.K. Rowling. But mm-hmm. I think, though, like with those episodes that we were talking about that Zach brought up, like Baylor and Blackwater, and what I'm assuming is the Red Wedding, which doesn't give anything away right now in season 3, which he will be writing. I feel like as an author, it's probably almost like he doesn't want anybody else to touch those episodes because they are so epic and so much does happen. Like with Baylor, you lose Ned, right? With Blackwater, it's the battle of the second book. And, you know, you're left wondering about the fates of so many different characters. And then with season 3, obviously, infer what you will, but it's a major event in the third book. So I can understand that from his standpoint, and we're lucky that he's, you know, still around to do that and to, you know, add his own thought to all of this.
Yeah, like I said, we are pretty lucky that he's not only a writer in book form, but he is good at this TV thing, which is that is really cool, you know.
Yeah.
Like, imagine if J.K. Rowling could have wrote the screenplays for the Potter films. Think about
all
that.
Right.
Then we would have gotten
those
old films. Or then we would have gotten like 3-hour, 4-hour long films as they should be.
Not comic strips?
I can't think of a single thing wrong with any of that.
No.
All right, so we have a comic strip. I'm going to post it in the show notes. It's on robotmutant.com. It's pretty cool. It's basically George R. R. Martin and J.K. Rowling having a cuppa. Shall we read it?
So, Ron and Ginny are lovers?
What? No, they're brother and sister.
Oh.
He's looking at his book. He's reading his book.
Not even a little bit.
So basically, if our verbal representation of the comic doesn't...
Dude, the comic is way better. I'm not even trying to like pretend that I did a decent job as George R. R. Martin.
Yeah,
you have to see this comic. Even the background, I wonder how the hell like visually they did this with...
It's a picture.
It's like they took a regular picture and then blurred it and darkened it.
That's exactly what they did. They took a regular picture.
I would say it works. I love this. I'm going to find
it's
out.
Very well done.
It looks great. Yeah, I love it. It's a neat idea. It's simple and good.
And J.K. Rowling channeled her inner Samwell Tarly there.
She did.
For a brief minute.
I think we can all be thankful that Ron and Ginny didn't make any Lannister-like babies, though. I believe that was the point of the comic. That's what I said.
Oh, I thought you said Hermione.
Did I say Hermione?
You'll play it back. You'll hear it. I don't know.
I'll just say this just in case. Ron and Ginny.
But I'm very glad they didn't do that. But hey, who knows? Maybe they would have had more chemistry than Dan Radcliffe and Bonnie Wright did in the film.
Micah and I have been watching football all day, texting each other updates on our current emotional state regarding what's been happening in the world of that. Other things happening tonight. There's actually something that's more appropriate for the Game of Owns listening audience, right, boys?
Yeah.
That's right. And there's going to be this new featurette that will air at 8:54 exactly. You have to go on at 8:54 Eastern time to that station called HBO, which you may or may not have heard of throughout the course of this episode. I hope you did. And it's called Game of Thrones in Production, and it'll have interviews with the creators, cast, and more, providing the first official look at Season 3. And some of the new characters, which we've gotten little snippets from. There was that Comic-Con video where we got to meet a lot of the new cast members, including Mirror and Jojen Reed, who I know Selena is a huge fan of.
I can hear her freaking out right now.
Yeah, hold on. Yep, that's her. Okay, go ahead.
So hopefully she will be tuning in as well to get this first look. But I'm looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to seeing what they've done so far that they can give us a sneak peek at.
It'll be really great to see these actors sitting with the knowledge that they've had two amazing seasons of television and they're now doing an interview for that. I love seeing the progression of people once they've, you know, relished in success for a while. Yeah, exactly.
Mansurator.
I agree with that, although I will say, you know, it's going to be the hardest thing about watching this video tonight is going to be realizing that the show is still 4 months away.
Yeah.
4 months. 4 months. Minus 1 day. It's 4 months away. That's a third of a year. It's just not – it's not coming anytime soon.
Right.
Well, rest easy, my friend. There are other television shows to watch. Girls starts on HBO in January. No, HBO is not – sponsoring this episode.
But Eric, the solution, I have a solution for you. You could actually pick up A Storm of Swords and read in advance and let your imagination create the picture of what's going on.
Who does that?
I have to get through what's the second one?
Clash of Kings.
Clash of Kings. I have to get through Clash of Kings first. Well, I have to get through the first book first.
Yeah, but you already know what happens in the first two seasons. You could just skip ahead.
Well, no, apparently I don't, right? Season two totally different.
Well, season two
book.
Is different. Game of Thrones was pretty much spot on, with the exception of like little pieces of backstory here and there. Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to be great because finally we get something that's not just text on a screen or numbers that are made of swords or daggers, you know, which really doesn't do anything for anybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually saw that on the side of a bus in New York when I was walking down the street last week.
What?
The numbers, you know, 33113. You know, it's a whole promotional campaign, but it's not really that interesting. Oh, and by the way, I did tweet from the Game of Thrones account, the camels that I referred to probably weeks ago at this point. You know, we had a big debate about camels and llamas and alpacas and
oh gosh,
I believe that we did,
and all different forms of
service animals.
Service animals. Yeah, there you go.
Yes,
but they have arrived. They have arrived, and they stand watch outside of Radio City Music Hall every morning now, waiting to return to Winterfell, which will probably be sometime in January.
Everything you've been talking about has a very high viral coefficient. Campbell's. Everyone loves Campbell's. Campbell's
Dude,
soup.
Campbell's soup.
They stink so bad.
That is a lie, and you know it. Also, everyone loves photographs of numerals.
Dude, you will not believe
viral graphics to share.
You will not believe the amount of people that stop and take pictures of these camels.
I know. I can't.
It's
believe
amazing.
It. They're magical animals. I would be one of those people if I was in your vicinity.
Well, I was one of those people, but
yes,
it's just funny now, just walking past them. Like I try not to get in the photo.
Right?
Isn't that cruelty to keep camels outdoors like that?
I mean, they don't live in houses naturally, so
aren't they desert animals though? I mean, I guess the desert gets pretty cold, but
yeah,
at night, yeah, it gets cold at night, but they're fine. They get moved into their either their warm trailer or inside
warm trailers.
Very warm.
Radio City.
Exactly. What kind of camels are these? Is the HBO store near there? Micah?
It's the HBO store is a little bit away. It's probably like 5 or 10 minute walk away from.
Oh, that's terribly far. Oh.
Yeah, that's so far in New York.
But you could get on a camel and ride it down to the HBO store.
Yeah, I would.
We're going to forgo owns this episode, mainly because we're running out of time, and also because we've just been talking about other owns. So to pick the own of owns would be really meta, and we're not very meta.
Not like meta world peace. Sorry.
Mike, you just named a basketball player.
I did.
Or Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
Or
but anyway.
The Hobbit. Meta digital, not.
What Zach is trying to say is we will read your owns and your tweets on the other two episodes later on in the week. But, of course, if you want to tweet at us, you can do so at Game of Owns, or you can even leave us a post on Facebook. I don't see as much going on the Facebook. Do you guys? Is it going out of style?
I'll tell you what happened, okay? Facebook has launched all this new privacy stuff, and people are just too scared to go outside anymore. So that's what the problem is.
Yeah, I don't know, Micah. Maybe you should redirect your threat off of iTunes. We're probably good on iTunes. We should need more more Facebook comments.
Yeah. We probably need a Game of Owns Instagram. You know what I'm saying? Because that's where all the kids are nowadays.
You know, I'm not on Instagram right now,
what?
Zach.
What really? Is up with iTunes? I know Eric brought this up before, but I'm going on here to try and see if I can find any you know, 5-star reviews to read for upcoming episodes, and it's completely... Wow.
You upgraded your iTunes. I told you.
I guess I did. I didn't even
know. It won't recognize my phone anymore.
Sorry, people. We've completely, gone off and talked about other things here. But that's okay, because that's what we do, and we hope we're entertaining you on some level. You know what else is entertaining? Despite the fact that Selena is not here, Hypeable.com.
Oh, it is.
It is. You know what else is? GameOfOwns.com.
It is.
They're great resources. You can watch Game of Thrones Seinfeld there. There's great episodes, as we talked about at the top of the show.
You can watch full episodes right in your browser. It's a secret link we won't tell anyone about.
Ooh.
Yeah. No, it's not true.
But I think we've plugged everything, so it might be time to say goodbye for this Monday.
How do we say bye to people? This is a lot of pressure, guys.
Au revoir. Doop 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 doop
doop. I'm Zach Louie.
I'm Micah Tenenbaum.
I'm Eric Scott.
Stay Kramer-y. That's the wrong show.
That's Doug. Let's go to the Honker Burger.
See you
all right, bye.